thank all of you for coming out this morning. I'd like to begin this press conference by reading a prepared statement. We will follow that up with a Q&A session. In this nation, we have a long tradition of honoring the brave men and women who have served in the military. We hold dear the memory and the valor of those who paid the ultimate sacrifice, gave their lives in defense of our freedom and our liberties. We extend this respect and admiration to the families of those who serve, because they too bear a tremendous burden and their loved ones are in harm's way. Above all, we respect the grief and the quiet dignity of the Gold Star mothers, fathers, spouses, who must live each day with the lingering absence of those so dear who are now among the fallen heroes. This is what we do as Americans. This is who we are. An ethical society that honors and appreciates those who have given so much through the years. Darren LaHood owes an apology to all the brave men and women of the 18th District in Illinois who have served, to their families, for remaining silent when Donald Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, whom he has endorsed, slanders the honor of America's finest and attacks the character of grieving parents. The 2016 presidential race has produced its share of lows, but the behavior that we have seen from Donald Trump over the past 4 days has been inexcusable. Shame has realized a new low, and those who endorse Trump's efforts are sullied by his behavior. Anyone who seeks or holds public office must understand that there is a point when country must take precedence over political partisanship. So much of the gridlock that we've seen in Washington, D.C. in recent years stems from the inability of our elected officials to be statesmen who appeal to the loftier goals instead of petty politicians who pander to the base in order to salvage all important votes. Today we are looking at a moment in which character matters, and we implore Congressman LaHood to do the honorable thing. I have no doubt that Congressman Darren LaHood is an honorable man, and it's to his sense of honor that I make this appeal. My concerns today are about his endorsement of Donald Trump and his apparent silence on the comments that Mr. Trump has made of late. These call into question the Congressman's judgment. It seems that when it comes to those proverbial gray areas, those challenging ethical questions that we must all must face, it appears that his moral compass does not always strike true north. If you must ask yourself, how much racism will you tolerate? How much sexism is appropriate? How much xenophobia is necessary? And how much divisiveness can one stir? It is clear that you are backing the wrong candidate. Congressman LaHood should take a cue from his father and reject the intolerance and bigotry that have become the bellwether of the Donald Trump candidacy. You're better than this as a nation. Put party loyalty aside. Put patriotism and country first. That's what Congressman LaHood must do. The residents of the 18th are watching and waiting. They expect you to do the right thing. We'll certainly hold you accountable if you fail to act. This time, we'll take any questions from media.
You're running in a district that has precedent for selecting Republican candidates. What are your thoughts on the 18th in regards to the upcoming race?
This district has always been perceived as a red district, and I would agree it's red. It's a conservative, it's a center-right district. The question is, how red is it? How much of a Republican district is it? Congressman LaHood assumes that this is a district that is a Tea Party red district. My view is that this district actually has much more of a center-right, suburban, moderate Republican presence. You certainly see that in Springfield, you see it in Quincy, you see it in Peoria, Bloomington as well. And I think that there are a significant number of moderate suburban Republicans who have been very much turned off by many of the things that have happened in the Trump campaign to date. And so automatically assuming that supporting the Republican nominee is going to guarantee that all the Republicans in the district will support your candidacy, that might be a false assumption this time around. If there's any one thing that we've gleaned so far from the 2016 race, it's that conventional wisdom doesn't seem to be working this time around. So the question is, in a center-right district, how far right is the district? Is it in the middle, or is it to the far right? I'm a conservative Democrat. I'm running as a centrist. My appeal is not only to get Democratic votes in this race, but it's an appeal to independents, it's an appeal to moderate Republicans. And I believe that in this contest, if people look at two candidates side by side, evaluate the issues that they both stand on, I think we have a good fighting chance in this district.
Before the DNC and the RNC, before they made their selections, what candidate were you backing? Which candidate did you feel was...
In the March primary, I did vote for Secretary Clinton. And my reason for doing so, and I've said this on several occasions, Senator Sanders brought forward some rather interesting points, some good points that need to be considered by the party. But we have to look at how practical it would be to accomplish some of the things that he was setting forth. I think that if he had a Congress, if he had a Senate and a House controlled by the Democrats, then it might well be possible that he could move forward on some of his policy proposals. But if he were to be elected with the current Congress that exists, I think that he would find himself sort of dead in the water in many respects, not being able to move forward his agenda. When looking at the qualifications for Secretary Clinton and for Senator Sanders, it seemed to me that her policy positions were much more toward the center. And again, running as a centrist Democrat, I could align my policy proposals much closer with hers.
You good? Do you have a question?
Yeah. So for people who don't know much about you here in this district, what kind of message would you like to send to them?
The message that I would like to send is that in the year of a political outsider, you're looking at one of the ultimate political outsiders. I'm not a career politician. I'm an educator. I've taught for 37 years, for the past 24 years at the college level at Eureka College. I am a person who believes in bringing people together. There's common sense solutions that exist. But what politicians must do is find a way to move beyond the politics, move beyond the partisanship. I'm certainly not a person who is controlled by any special interests. I'm a person who's not controlled by any party agenda. If you look at the proposals that I put forth in this campaign, we're drawing ideas from the Republicans, from the Democrats, from Libertarians. We're bringing ideas together simply because they make sense and they're practical, they're pragmatic, and they can work to make real differences in the lives of people. In addition to that, if you are looking for a candidate who has total allegiance to the people, that's the kind of campaign that I'm running. I'm not going to be controlled by party interests. I'm not going to be controlled by any of the big money interests. It's the people that I'm going to represent. And that, by the way, includes the people that vote for me and the people that don't vote for me. The congressman who serves this area has to represent all the people. And if you do that job effectively, you're probably going to annoy a lot of people along the way because you'll have to make decisions that sometimes folks will agree with and sometimes they won't agree with. But if your guiding principle is what is in the best interest of the district, that I think that people will come to trust the candidate who takes that position. In terms of policies that we have put forward, jobs creation, education and training are some of the key things that are necessary, especially in some of the western counties here in the 18th. It's one of the key things we have to work on. We've laid out a number of proposals dealing with infrastructure improvements, interstate highways, development of locks on the river. A lot of these things are projects that people have been talking about for years. There's been no movement because of the political gridlock we've seen. So we've got to find a way to move beyond that gridlock, move beyond the partisanship, and actually find a way to get things done.
And why was it so important to you to come out to all these spots today and make these statements?
We wanted to reach out to the community today because this is such an important issue at this moment. I think what this really calls into question is the kind of judgment that we see on the side of the Trump campaign. And if you've noticed in the past 48 hours, many prominent Republicans have been peeling away from their support of the Trump campaign. Speaker Ryan is doing so. Certainly, Senator McCain had very strong statements yesterday about Mr. Trump. One other thing that has just come across the last 36 hours or so. There was a Trump event in which a supporter handed Donald Trump a Purple Heart, gave Purple Heart to Donald Trump. And Trump's response was, I appreciate this. I've always wanted a Purple Heart. I've always wanted a Purple Heart, and it was much easier to get it this way. And several veterans groups from around the country have said, nobody wants a Purple Heart. This is something that you get because you have earned it through your valor on the field of battle. The only thing that Donald Trump has suffered is perhaps a bruised ego, but I don't think we give away Purple Hearts to bruised egos. What we need to do is we need to look at the judgment of our candidates, and what I mean here, we need to look at the judgment of those who endorse a Trump campaign, endorse a Trump presidency. Because this is demonstrating to us whether individuals are putting party loyalty ahead of country, party loyalty ahead of national interest. And I believe that the kind of campaign that Mr. Trump has run, a campaign that is purposefully very divisive, a campaign that does not summon us to what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature, but a campaign that brings us down to our most base level. This is not who we are as a country. And if someone is automatically going to say, because this person has an R next to their name, they have my full endorsement, they have my full backing, we have to question the judgment of those who would simply give that kind of blanket endorsement. I think that is very problematic.
You seem to have a very firm stance on veterans' issues. What ties do you have to the military? And in addition, what veterans' issues specifically would you like to address?
That's a very good question. I'm not a veteran myself. I'm of that generation that sort of came of age between the Vietnam era and between the first Gulf War era. In my own family background, I had four uncles who served during the Second World War. One of those died at the very end of the Battle of the Bulge. My grandmother on my mother's side was a Gold Star mother, which is one of the reasons why what has happened to the Khan family, especially to Mrs. Khan, in recent days is especially disturbing. One of the policy proposals that we have put out in recent years, in recent weeks, has to do with improvements that can be made to the VA. In particular, there was a policy that was issued within the last year where hospitals that are not affiliated with the VA can actually do emergency work to assist veterans who need care. One of the things we've come to discover, though, is that they built into this policy a provision where the hospitals that agree to do that are not allowed to advertise those services. Thus, there are veterans who live in places like Springfield who could get treatment in Springfield, but they're not able to find out what hospitals in the area have signed on to this program unless they make contact, the inquiry to the hospitals themselves. And what would happen is they would have to go to VA hospitals in different parts of the state when they could actually get treatment right where they are. And so we believe that provision of not allowing hospitals to advertise their involvement with the VA program is one of the things that needs to be changed and needs to be changed immediately. We want to make sure that America's servicemen and servicewomen are getting the best care that they can, that when we put them into harm's way, that we're giving them the best materials, the best equipment that we can give. We owe a tremendous amount to the sacrifice that individuals are making, both those who serve and their families. And as a nation, we need to make sure that we have a firm commitment that we are going to live up to our ideals and we're going to support them in every way possible.